Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Junk Magic by Karen Chance, narrated by Tracy Odom. Chapter 1. There were 3 donuts sitting on Hargrove's desk. Not normal-sized ones. I doubted he ate that much in a week. No, these were minis. 6 little powdered sugar-coated temptations, one of which had a single bite taken out of it. And doesn't that say everything about the man, I thought evilly. To most people, one of those donuts was a bite. But Hargrove's could make a single donut last him all day. Sort of like a single lecture. This one had been going on for what felt like a week, although knowing the boss's tight schedule was probably more like 10 minutes. I'd stopped listening after 2 because it was always the same thing. My students were wreaking havoc. My students were out of control. I don't know what else he expected. Thanks to the needs of the current war, the War Mage Corps, the supernatural community's version of the police, had started accepting younger and younger recruits. This last batch didn't contain a person over the age of 19. Teenagers. He was giving me magically gifted teens with hormones on overdrive and power to burn and expecting me to churn out spit and polished recruits. Okay. Yes, they'd blown up the gym. Again. I was just lucky they hadn't taken the rest of the Corps' new headquarters along with it. Not that it would be much of a loss, I thought, glancing around the dingy office. Only to have the boss notice. And apparently, number 10,001 on the list of things I did to irritate him was allowing my mind to wander during a chewing out. Although, what came out of his mouth next wasn't what I'd expected.
"Which is why I'm promoting you," he said sourly.
I blinked.
"Promoting, sir?" "To train our new task force. They're to be housed in a separate facility, with rather more security features than this one."
The sour look intensified.
"Perhaps you can manage to keep it intact for a week or two."
I blinked some more, this time in confusion. "But my students
reassigned to Mage Reynolds."
Reynolds? It took me a second, but then an image of a sandy-haired, round-faced, jolly-tempered mage, fresh off the turnip truck from one of our more rustic offices, came to mind. Dear God, they'd eat him alive. "But, sir, we just had a breakthrough."
"Yes, of the back of the building."
A comeback leaped to my lips, but I held it back ruthlessly. Not for myself. Hargrove's already thought I was stubborn, unpredictable, and a bit of an asshole, which was why he had me teaching. The supernatural community might be at war, but teaching assignments were thought to be far more worthy of combat pay. And considering what often went on in the classroom, I firmly agreed with that. Magic didn't like to be leashed, and young, bountiful, reckless magic even less so. My students needed me.
"Sir, I really think—"
"Let's go meet your new class, shall we?" Hargrove said, and stood up without letting me finish.
I got up, because he was the boss, but I was frowning when we reached the corridor. And even more so when we left the admin wing and headed across the big open room that served as reception area, training ground, and gym all in one, part of which was still on fire. I assumed that was why I was suddenly the focus of half the eyes in the place. That was better than when I'd first been assigned here 9 months ago, and the stairs had been for a different reason. Part Fae were not all that strange in the War Mage Corps. Maybe 5% of the whole had some kind of unusual blood in their veins, although it was often so far back as to manifest as nothing more than a faint tinge of blue or green along a cheekbone, or better than average sight in the dark. Wares, on the other hand, were a lot less thick on the ground. Of course, we weren't supposed to be on the ground, at least not wearing a war mage uniform. But my father was Guillaume de Crosset, from a family with a long history of service to the Corps, and many times decorated for his service. He was retired now.
But when he'd announced that his daughter Akalia was going to follow in his footsteps, no one had had the gall to tell him no. Or the courage, probably. Dad had a temper. Something he'd passed down to me, along with my dark brown hair and lanky 5'9" build. But my gray eyes were wolf eyes, my mother's eyes, and while they looked human enough, I'd heard that they were hard to meet. Which was probably why a couple of nearby gawkers scurried off when I sent them the glare they deserved, before following Hargroves downstairs. And started to get nervous. The Corps' new digs were in a decrepit 13,000-square-foot warehouse on an arid bit of desert in the vicinity of Nellis Air Force Base. Or at least the upper level was. It was mainly taken up by administrative offices, training areas, and housing for new recruits, while the newly excavated subterranean sections hid the harder-to-explain stuff, like the interspecies medical facilities, weapons storage, and labs. And the lockup, which was where it looked like we were headed. Sir, I said, wondering why my new students were already incarcerated. That usually took a few weeks, at least. But Hargroves wasn't listening. Open up, he snapped at the guard standing on either side of a large metal door. Considering the types of wards draped over it, I didn't know why they were there at all. It could have withstood a nuclear blast, much less an escape attempt. Not that the junkies, scammers, and drunks that made up most of its current residents warranted that kind of precaution. But then it hadn't been made for them. It had been made for them, I thought, after we passed through the door and down a corridor, only to stop in front of a large, well-warded cell. And suddenly, I caught a clue. I also caught Hargrove's eyes, which were looking almost pleased for once, and forgot about my resolution about not pissing off the boss, because he certainly hadn't made a similar one. You have got to be freaking kidding me! A couple of very long hours later, I pulled my Harley into my driveway, only to find a similar bike already there. The sleek crotch rocket was parked alongside a battered pickup, with a ladder and some paint buckets sitting in the back. I suddenly felt better. I let myself into the house, which looked less like a war zone than it had for months. A previous issue with another class of students had utterly trashed the place. It wasn't their fault. A mage had used their inexperience to enthral them and then send them against me, resulting in a fight where I was caught between not wanting to kill my students and not wanting to die at their hands. The result had been the almost destruction of my brand new house, something my boyfriend was trying to rectify. And looking good doing it. Not that Cyrus ever looked less than edible, but in an old tank riding up to show off sculpted abs and paint-splattered jeans clinging to a better backside than any man deserved, he was stunning. Enough to make me pause in the doorway in admiration. He heard me, of course. I hadn't inherited my mother's super-sharp senses, but Cyrus had the full wolfly package. He'd heard me drive up. Hell, he'd probably heard my bike from a dozen blocks away, and he'd smelled me before I hit the door. Yet he didn't turn around. He just kept painting my living room wall with the tasteful soft beige I'd picked out, the smooth movement of the roller a counterpoint to the stretch and flex of all those muscles. I was suddenly very happy that I brought dinner. Dining in was sounding better all the time. I dropped my keys into a dish, and Cyrus finally glanced over his shoulder, the too long dark brown hair curling against his neck, because he only remembered to get it cut occasionally, and what looked like 2 days' worth of scruff on his cheeks, even though I knew he'd shaved that morning. He'd been staying at my place while renovations continued, and I'd found little bits of hair in my sink before I left. It was annoying, like the fact that he appeared to need 6 towels to take a bath. A grin broke over the handsome face, and the whiskey-colored eyes lit up at seeing me. I could deal, I decided. Fun day at the office? He asked. I took off my jacket and stretched, watching his eyes follow the movement. No.
No?
An eyebrow raised as he came down the ladder, with no hands and without looking at it, because wares have an uncanny spatial awareness.
Just no?
Just no, I agreed. There were days when I wanted to talk about the job, or bitch more often. This wasn't one of them. With tarp-covered holes in the walls, I didn't run the AC much, just a fan over the bed at night. And even to my human nose, he smelled of paint and sweat and the beer he'd had on a break, the bottle of which was still sitting by the wall. I didn't care. Hard arms engulfed me, a harder body pressed up against me, and a mouth came down on mine that wasn't just hard. It was hungry. And so was I. I had the tank off and him pushed against the wall in seconds, and was working on the Phoenix belt buckle one of his own sort of students had given him when he grabbed my wrist.
Not now.
Why not now? He was ready. I could feel it. And God, so was I. Time to work off some stress.
We have company.
What? I glanced up to find him looking over my shoulder, where a swivel of my head showed me two lanky teens lounging in the doorway to the dining room, trying not to grin. They weren't trying very hard.
At Calia de Croisset, meet Jace and Jaden.
Brothers? I guessed.
Twins,
the slightly taller one said. Fraternal.
Ah,
that would explain why, although they favored, they weren't identical. One was milk chocolate, the other dark. One had a buzz cut, and the other was growing a very respectable fro. One had on baggy jeans that must have been enchanted, because no way were they staying up otherwise, while the other was wearing a tracksuit worthy of a Russian mobster. Yet they really were similar. In fact, other than for the piercing in tracksuit's nose, I'd have been hard-pressed to tell them apart by facial features alone, especially since they both smelled of wolf, but not of clan. Normally, having two Varkles, the outcasts of the ware community, in your house would be cause for alarm, assuming you lasted that long. They tended to be desperate, dangerous types with murky pasts, the kind with a lot of power but few restrictions on how they used it, because they literally had nothing left to lose. But when your boyfriend is one too, you get a different perspective. Not that it was so clear-cut in his case. Because Cyrus was something I wasn't sure the were-world had ever seen before, an outcast by choice. It had started when his older brother, Sebastian, the leader of the powerful and wealthy Arno clan, had decided that he wanted to be Bardrick. Humans would translate the term as king, but that was pretty far off the mark. First among equals would be a better version, although it actually meant war chief. Because the only time the clans had ever agreed to submit to one man's rule was when they were threatened with disaster, and even then it was touch and go. Wares didn't play well with others, and resented being bossed around by a wolf outside of their own clan. Like, really resented. Like, tear your head off and feed on your entrails resented. Yet the war had demanded sacrifices from everyone, and theirs had involved choosing a leader. It had gone about the way you'd expect. After weeks of yelling, fighting, sometimes literally, and utter stalemate, Sebastian had come up with an idea. The other clan leaders viewed him as more of a diplomat than a warrior, because he occasionally liked to talk before the head-ripping started. In the human world, that would be an asset. In the ware, not so much. Not that most wares were quite that temperamental, but any sign of weakness in a leader was anathema. Your alpha was your life. He could lead you to success or utter destruction, so you damned well wanted him to be the baddest son of a bitch out there. Which was why, despite the power and prestige of Arno, Sebastian had been having trouble sealing the deal. But he'd had to seal it, because the next most likely candidate was Whirlwind of Rant, the wolf name of the leader of the second most powerful clan, and Ran hated the current human ware alliance. If Whirlwind had become Bardrick, the Corps would be fighting this war alone, unless you counted the vampires. And nobody counted the damned vampires. They dealt with high-level politics and otherworld invasions, which was all well and good and absolutely needed. But what about the little guy on the street? Who protected them? And they needed protection. The other side knew that the best way to keep the Corps busy was to run us ragged preventing terrorist attacks. And for a while, they'd done a pretty good job. But that was before the Ware Council started providing support. Unlike vamps, who tended to stay in their own little enclaves, Wares were a part of their communities. They ran businesses, employed locals, bought homes, and went to farmers' markets. Yes, their kids usually went to special schools, both to teach them clan norms and to keep youthful hormones in check, especially around the full moon. But other than that, and for a few festivals and meetings of a clan throughout the year, their lives weren't markedly different from the guy down the street. Except that the guy down the street couldn't throw you through a building if you pissed him off. But the clans kept that kind of thing pretty much in check, and their involvement in the community had been a lifesaver for the Corps. Turns out, super senses were really good for picking up danger signs. Wares could smell magic, and even differentiate between light and dark varieties. Having the clans on board had cut the Corps' workload by an order of magnitude, helping us hunt down dark mage enclaves, protect vulnerable human communities, even stop an attack on HQ. That last had been an accident. Aware had been in line at headquarters, waiting to get a shaman's license renewed, when he smelled the stench of blood magic. It was emanating off a new arrival so thickly that it had almost knocked him down. Our enemies had known that getting a bomb past the Corps' fearsome wards would be impossible, so they'd found some old drunk, stuffed him to the gills with life magic, the kind that wards couldn't detect because all magical humans have it, and sent him in. The magic in his veins was bound to a spell powerful enough to have taken out half the facility and killed who knew how many mages. And it would have, except that the Ware jumped him half a second before his body exploded. The vicious attack caused the tainted blood to spurt out everywhere, the magic to disperse, and the Ware to be tackled by no fewer than 8 war mages for his trouble. They'd eventually sorted things out, and he'd received an apology and a reward from the Corps. But it showed that, despite every possible precaution, if somebody wants to get to you, they can get to you. Unless, of course, you have paid Ware guards stationed all over your lobby, as we now did. One of them, Hernando, made the world's best tamales. They'd caused the cafeteria's revenues to take a nosedive ever since he started showing up with the cart that he parked outside the front door. 'Cause why not double dip? I'd gained at least 5 pounds and felt a lot safer ever since. But that could all go away if an anti-Corps leader like Whirlwind got into power, which was why Sebastian and Cyrus had rigged up a plan. Sebastian needed a show of strength to impress the clan leaders, but nothing Penny Ante would do. So Cyrus had challenged his brother for leadership of Arno, and then thrown the fight, ensuring that Sebastian looked badass enough to win the vote. As a result, the Ware stayed in the war, a lot of people stayed alive, and Cyrus was made an outcast for life. Or until the war ended and he and Sebastian could admit what had happened and bring him back into the fold. That would entail its own special set of problems. But they were minor compared to a world without family, something that to wolves was literally a fate worse than death. Which, I guess, was why Cyrus had made his own. 2 of whom were currently eyeing my bag of tamales. "You guys want some?" I asked, and had the bag snatched away almost before the words left my lips. The 2 ran off, I guess so they wouldn't have to share, and I arched a brow at Cyrus.
"I've been having them do grunt work," he told me. "They need the cash."
"Except now we have no dinner. Guess that means you'll have to take me out."
"I planned on it. Way out."
I cocked my head. "Do I want to know what that means?" The grin returned.
"Oh, yeah."
Chapter 2. We took both bikes, because my beat-up old truck was not going to make it where we were going, and because the boys were coming along for the ride.
"Jaden and I'll take this one," Jay said,
staring in approval at my tripped-out Harley-Davidson night rod with black chrome and blood-red accents. Cyrus had a black and silver version, but I guess Jace liked my color scheme better. So did I, and preferably intact. "Not a chance," I told him. "Oh, come on! Then you can ride with Cyrus." I threw a leg over. "Yeah, but this way I can race Cyrus." Jace's eyes lit up. We set out sedately enough, until we left my nice, quiet subdivision behind and hit the open road. Then we floored it. I heard Jay swoop from behind me, while Jaden clung to Cyrus like he was afraid the wind was going to blow him off the back of the bike. Which it just might have, because the open road outside Vegas is really open. And really fun. With long, straight highways that seem to go on forever, surrounded by dusty plains, sweeping hills, and giant azure skies, Nevada has some of the best riding country anywhere. And if you add in the Valley of Fire, with the red hills glowing like embers in the sunset, it turns into pure magic. My only question was what we were doing out here, especially with the boys. Cyrus and I frequently went camping, but usually for some alone time, somewhere no one would hear us howl. I got my answer when we turned off the beaten path and bumped across open country to a busy campsite where I sent my partner a look. He just took off his helmet and shook out his hair at me. The bastard knows I love that. And then helped poor Jaden off the back of the bike, who was looking about as shaken as a ware can.
"We won! We won!"
Jay said, laughing, because we'd rolled to a stop maybe 5 seconds before they had.
"I don't want to race anymore," Jaden said thickly.
And then he threw up. There was some fussing over him after that, and some teasing from the circle of young men around a campfire who already had some hot dogs roasting. Jaden went over to sit with them, perking up slightly at the smell of meat, because nothing puts a ware stomach out of commission for long. Somebody threw a blanket around his shoulders and handed him a stick, and the ride from hell was soon forgotten. Leaving me looking at the pretty picture of deepening violet twilight, with a rim of reddish orange still clinging to the horizon and stars blooming overhead. It contrasted nicely with the firelight splashing the excited faces of 9 young men, most of them in their late teens, yet looking like kids at their first campout, which, for all I knew, this might be.
"Wanted to get them out of the city,"
Cyrus murmured, coming up behind me and slipping his arms around my waist.
"It's a full moon tonight."
I nodded. Unlike the legends, wearers had full control of when and where they changed, which was one reason they were so deadly. But the full moon did affect them, making them more reckless, less inhibited, and more prone to violence than usual. And that was for people who weren't Vargulfs with self-control issues. I could understand why Cyrus wanted his protégés somewhere a little more remote tonight. And it looked like they planned to stay for a while. There was a ring of tents beyond the firelight, little two-man things that blended into the countryside pretty well, and a beaten-up old Winnebago that definitely did not.
"The new digs?" I guessed. He'd said he was going to up his camping game.
"Better than a tent,"
he agreed, nibbling my neck.
"It has a bed."
"Which we'd get more use out of if you hadn't brought half the city."
"They're sound sleepers."
I doubted that, especially tonight. The moon wasn't up yet, but as soon as it rose, the boys would be off, transformed and chasing unfortunate little creatures all over the wilderness, leaving the camp basically deserted. I perked up. "Dinner first," I told him, because those hot dogs were smelling seriously delicious. They were good, as it turned out, and so was the company. That surprised me a little. The Vargulfs I'd met in the past had been suspicious, angry, alienated types with little to say. And that was when they were talking at all and not trying to gut me. But that was sort of understandable when you realized what most of them had been through. The Ware community was governed by a very strict caste system, with the older, richer, more influential families at the top, and everyone else spread down the ladder at different levels. Everybody except the Vargulfs, that is. They didn't have a clan, and thus had no access to the money, protection, and rights that afforded, including the right to set foot on clan property. More than one Vargulf had been killed simply for entering the wrong business, without first checking to see who owned it. The clan said it was necessary to keep their people safe, that Vargulfs had gotten that way for a reason, and that they were dangerous. And sometimes that was true. A person could be thrown out of the clans for any number of things, including some pretty bad stuff. Many Vargulfs were every bit as dangerous as the clans made them sound. But there were other reasons why someone could end up without clan affiliation. Being born on the wrong side of the blanket, for example, to a father or mother who didn't choose to claim you. Or being born to someone who was already Vargulf themselves. Or having done something that displeased your clan leaders, even if said something was not worthy of lifelong exile. And the bad part of it was, there was no way back again. Once you were out, unless you could convince some other clan to take you. But guess how many of the insular clans wanted to waste resources on someone who hadn't been wanted even by their own families? Yeah, just about that many. It was something Cyrus was trying to change. Born to privilege in Arno, he'd never thought much about the outcasts of the Werewolf until he became one himself. At first, he thought exile would be easy. He'd even thought it might be fun, surviving for a while on his wits, free of the responsibilities of being essentially were-royalty, just him against the world. It hadn't been fun. He'd confessed to me once that killing himself had started to look like a really good option just a couple of months in. He'd never before realized how much he'd relied on the clan, how much of his strength he drew from it, how much of his identity, until it suddenly wasn't there anymore. And that was while having something these boys had never known. Hope. Hope that the war would end, and Sebastian could risk telling everyone the truth. Hope that he could avoid getting killed until that happened. Hope that there would come a time when he would wake up from this nightmare, when clan-affiliated people wouldn't cross the street to avoid him, and when he could hold his head up again. Hope that somehow, someday, he could go home. But what if you didn't have a home and knew you never would? It wasn't too surprising that a lot of Vargulfs didn't last long, and those who did were easy pickings for the less respectable elements in Ware society, who knew that the outcasts could be exploited without the risk of having a family come down on your neck. Because these boys no longer had one. Although you'd never know it tonight. They were laughing, talking, and eating, especially eating. Like they didn't have a care in the world. It looked like Cyrus had bought out half a grocery store, and he needed every bit of it. Young men can eat, but young werewolves can eat everything, especially on the night of a full moon. I could tell that Cyrus had taken the guy shopping with him, because there was all sorts of junk food scattered around the fire. But there were a few grown-up items, too, including potatoes roasting in the embers. I grabbed one, burning my fingers, and loaded it up with some of the bacon that one of the guys was frying in a pan, shredded cheese, and chives. Who had thought to bring chives, I didn't know. But they went well with everything else, including the two chili dogs that were slid onto my plate by a short redhead. "You can't just eat a potato," he said, ducking his head shyly. Actually, I could, and probably should. Thanks to Hernando's tamales, I needed to drop a few pounds before my next fitness evaluation. I suddenly wondered if that was why the core cafeteria was so terrible, to keep us all slim. It was a theory. But I guess the moon was affecting me, too, because I wolfed it all down while the guys joked and laughed and talked. It was obvious that they'd forgotten for a moment who they were and where they fit, or didn't fit, into the world we lived in. Which I guess was why they started debating how it got that way. "Everyone was a Vargulf once," one pointed out. He was a stereotypical were, tall, gray-eyed, and dark-haired, and maybe 16 or so. I thought his name might be Colin.
"I mean, nobody had clans at the beginning, right?"
"Of course we had clans," one of the others said. He was a dishwater blonde with uncharacter.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?